dialing up your cable TV.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. On the same day, the FCC released a study that showed cable TV rates have zoomed up 93% in the past decade. The agency also did something that might stabilize those rates. It's making it easier for the phone companies to get into the cable business. Now, local governments will have to act faster on applications from would-be cable providers like Verizon. Some detractors say that won't necessarily mean lower bills. The U.S. Department of Education is considering limits on the fees universities charge for collecting on defaulted student loans. Some schools have been charging former students as much as 66% of the original debt. Marketplace's Sam Eaton reports.
It's a familiar scenario, says Luke Swarthout with USPIRG's Higher Education Project.
The student with $10,000 in debt leaves school, doesn't complete. After a period of 9 months, their loan goes in default. They don't repay in the first efforts of the collection agency, and a second collection agency pursues the loan.
Under federal law, universities determine the penalties on defaulted loans, so long as those fees are, quote, reasonable. But Swarthout says that's where the rub is.
A student who already has a challenge repaying a $10,000 loan is going to have an even greater challenge repaying $16,000 in debt if you tack on a 60% collection fee.
Universities say they need to recoup those costs in order to fund new student loans. The Department of Education's proposal would likely cap fees closer to the 16% average for student loans administered by the government. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Optioning out of options. The Wall Street Journal's reporting that IBM is doing away with stock options grants for its outside board of directors. Big Blue says they're going to give them $200,000 a year instead. All those scandals with options this year may mean a trend away from using them as rewards. The price of things like auto parts and jewelry from developing countries is about to go up. A revamped trade program signed into law by President Bush means those things may now be taxed. From New Delhi, Miranda Kennedy says there go the trade preferences.
India stands to lose billions of dollars if the U.S. starts taxing its products like gold jewelry and brass lamps. In an effort to prevent that, the country petitioned the trade office to continue its duty-free benefits next year. Last year, the U.S. imported $19 billion of goods from India. $4 billion of that was duty-free. Trade analyst T.S. Vishwanath says India is willing to bring down its own tariff rates if it will help it keep the U.S. preferences.
Here is India, which has now come out and saying that we are ready to bring down our customs duties, our tariff rates, and we now want to engage with whom we believe are our major trade partners. I think that's a huge statement.
India is not alone. A dozen other countries may lose their trade preferences, too, as the U.S. tries to repair trade imbalances with the developing world. In New Delhi, I'm Miranda Kennedy for Marketplace.
And on Wall Street Wednesday, the Dow closed down 7 to 12,463. The Nasdaq was down 2, and the S&P was down 2 to 1453. This is Marketplace. The best places to do business if you're a woman? D.C., Maryland, and Massachusetts. Hillary Wickay looks at a new study by the Institute for Women's Policy Research.
Women have made big gains in the past 5 years in education and business ownership, and a higher proportion of women work in professional and managerial jobs than men. Still, women didn't close the wage gap. In fact, women saw that gap get bigger in 15 states. Economist Heidi Hartman says women may be increasing their credentials, but their wages aren't keeping pace. In other words, ladies, we're running faster to stay in place.
This is a bad sign and indicates trouble ahead for pay parity for women, in my view. Coupled with the increases in women's college education that we are also seeing, it indicates a deepening of discrimination against women in the labor market.
At the present rate, it'll take 50 years for women to achieve pay parity with men. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wickay for Marketplace.
And this is American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, committed to providing financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive. Thrivent.com. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Lisa Napoli. There's a national law being drafted by Iraqi politicians that would put the central government in Baghdad in charge of oil revenues. The law would also encourage foreign investment in the Iraqi oil industry, which is the world's second largest. The U.S. government has been pushing for adoption of the law, and the recent Iraq Study Group report pushes for it, too. Antonia Juhas of the Institute for Policy Studies says there's another take on it.
The problem with the law is how it has come about. The intense pressure, external pressure, that the Iraqi government is under to pass it, and the potential and most likely beneficiaries of the law, which are foreign, namely U.S. and some British oil companies, and the losers, the Iraqi public.
What's the structure of the oil industry in Iraq right now, and how has it been operating during the war?
It's a nationalized oil system. It has been nationalized since the 1970s. How it's been operating is actually fairly well during the occupation period. Prior to the invasion, Iraq's oil production was at about 2.5 million barrels per day. Since the invasion, it's been at about 2.2, and now it's at 2.3 million barrels of oil a day. U.S. companies, among others, are marketing that oil, but Iraq's national oil system and oil companies are the ones that are making the oil system work right now and have always done so in the past.
So the oil companies, from what I've read, are reluctant to come on in unless this law happens. What's the reluctance?
The reluctance is that they want to get as good of a deal as they can, and they're in a pretty good condition to get that right now, given that the United States is maintaining an occupation of that country. And the best deal possible is the one that's currently on the table in Iraq, production sharing agreements opened up to private foreign companies.
Is it the commercial oil companies that stand to really gain the most financially because of this law?
The potential beneficiaries are any international oil company. There's nothing, I imagine, that will be put down in writing that says that U.S. oil companies should be the one to benefit. However, U.S. oil companies have certainly played a large role in working for free with the Iraqi government since the invasion. Chevron has been training Iraqi oil workers for free since the invasion began. Companies including Exxon and Conoco and Chevron have been conducting free assessments and studies of Iraq's oil for the Iraqi government. Of course, there's no guarantee, but I would argue that the presence of the U.S. occupation helps give the U.S. oil companies a leg up in the decision-making process.
Antonia Juhas is a visiting scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
You'd think U.S. corporations would export good old American.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.